This is AM Studios Podcast, where we curate all the knowledge, resources, and power you need to help you create your business in entertainment, podcasting, music, tech, art, fashion, and more. Every week, we share everything we've learned at AM from the greatest minds in the business. Let's go.
Hi, guys. Hi, everyone. I'm Ultimatum. I want to ask, my question is mostly, it's going towards, I think, both management and legal. It's simple tiers. So, you know, I had a situation, right? There's a Neo song I sampled, right? So I did sample the song. Then I tagged him on it. He actually ended up seeing the song. And he liked it and expressed that he wanted to work, possibly. So I took that as like a clearance for the song. I tried to put out the song. It was taken down. So my distributor was asking me that I should get like a license document from the owner of the master. So my question is, how do I go about getting that license document from the owner of the master? Do I go directly to the label, or do I go back to him?
And he probably doesn't own the master.
That's why I mentioned the label. Because when I did research, he's on the Def Jam US. And when I think I'm in South Africa, getting a hold of them is going to be like a mission. So should I just let the song go, or... Because I'm in a real pickle.
Honestly, it's actually crazy that you mentioned sample clearances, because we've been having this conversation in the office and I'm just like, guys, it's such a mess because people just be dropping songs that have been inspired by somebody else.
Especially piano.
Yes, yes.
It becomes very awkward, right? with regards to the license document, so what we have done at TaylorMade, and I would like to believe that a lot of legal, you know, bodies actually do this. And I also think it just lessens the administrative burden on the artist. Again, like, nobody wants to be sampling songs, right? So in terms of the master license agreement, which is what we would prepare with your, you know, we'd send it out to the original master rights holders. In this case, you'd want to assume that it's Neo. And then they would have to clear that. So you'd offer them, I don't know, whatever it is that you want to offer, 50-50 on net sales or net receipts, which is ordinarily what you'd want to do when you clear a sample. Alternatively, then they would then come back with like a counter proposal, and we say, no, you've used a large share of the song itself, so we want, I don't know, something crazy, say 80%.
I've got an example here. Someone sampled a song. One of my clients sampled a song.
Yeah.
The person came back and said they want 100% publishing.
Yeah. And it really does happen. It really does happen, right? But you'd want to send that document out to them, let them have a look at it. It is quite difficult. It sounds almost impossible that this would actually land. But again, an email away. All these resources are readily available for you. Keep sending it to the right people, even if it's on the DMs. Send a screenshot of what the license agreement actually looks like and say, look, I've sampled this song. I want to release my song. This is what I'm offering you. What's your take? It sounds very informal, but it's got there's a formality to all of this, right? And they'll respond, should they respond. But in terms of the sample clearances, please do that before you drop the song, because it becomes a mess. It becomes a mess for everybody.
A follow-up question on that question. How much is sampling? Because... I'll make an example, Nivo. There's a song Musa did, I think it's Thando Lwami. At the end of that song, he samples another old song. My question is now, it's literally just like 45 seconds?
It's actually have the same question. So what did you guys do?
So I called Mom Judith Sapur and asked, please can we use this thing? She says, Ash, I don't know who my publisher was at the time. So we went back to the album and looked, and then at the time she was at Sony ATV. We call Sony ATV, hey guys, can we please clear the sample? Oh no, that album we didn't do. So then it was a whole rat race of trying to find it. But the reality of the situation is, the moment you're going to take someone else's recording or property and you add it into yours, it's already sampling.
Regardless of how long it is.
You have to get permission.
Okay. All right.
Good afternoon. So I have three questions for you guys. So the first question is directed to Beagle. I wanted to know, what kind of business should I register when I want to open a record label? Is it a close corporation, a private company, whatever? And then the follow-up question is, what does a deal of assignment actually entail? Like, I'd like to know that, the criteria within it. And then the last one goes to management. It's how many people make out a team effect from management, you know, like everyone in that ecosystem. Yeah, then that's all.
Okay, do you want to go first?
Okay, I'll go first. It really depends on what your artist needs. It really, really depends on what your artist needs. And for example, one of my clients has, I'm sorry to say this, three different legal firms representing them, because it's three different things and three different scenarios that, you know, one of them has a business affairs of his own that looks after his business interests. So it really depends on what exactly you need as an artist and what the gaps are.
First question, the company that you need to register. It's definitely not a public company, I'll tell you that. Don't make that mistake. So ordinarily, and what we've seen, they're all private companies. So you just register a company on the CIPC website, private company, not a public, not a state-owned, you know, those type of things. It's just a private company. So straight up, there's no unnecessary things that you'd want to add to that. Just register a private company and trade as a label, right? The second question on what is a deed of assignment. I need to know in what context you need to explain. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, so a deed of assignment, I don't know if that is necessarily what you're looking to do, but a deal of assignment in legal jargon is essentially assigning rights to somebody else. So I own a works and I can then assign or give right to or waive my rights to whatever works to Nevo to exploit and do whatever. So for instance, when you have your music, right, and you now go into collaboration or you sign under a label, you are then giving them rights to your music to exploit however they wish. And this is why it's always, you know, this conversation of, no, I want to own my masters. I want to own my masters. And it's like, sure, it's all good and well to own your masters, but why not give them to a machine that is a big record label to work the masters, who have the resources and the people to do with that what they must. So essentially, deed of assignment is assigning your rights to somebody else to do with that what they need to.
All right, Nicole.
Good day, everyone. So I recently got approached by a record label. So this guy saw my music on YouTube. He reached out and he wants to do a project. He gave me the contract. I went through it, and the contract specifically says he owns the masters. So what I wanted to know is, because the record label is still unknown and they're still small, can I negotiate for, if not a percentage of the masters, should I negotiate? I shouldn't just keep my masters. And then my second question is, how specific should the contract be? Because most of the things we talked about them verbally, like how much they're going to put on the table, which management companies they're going to use. So, all of that stuff. So I wanted to know how specific should it be? Like, should it talk about everything, the amount, the management companies, the studios, and whatever?
I think let me start. It's very important to make sure you have everything on paper. Everything has to be on paper. I'll make an example. There was sorry, every time I think about the situation, my heart breaks. But there was a young artist who was really, really popping. The company found him. This company found him. They wanted to sign him. Oh, you're amazing. We're going to blow you up, you know. They agree verbally on things. Okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. The contract comes. He's a kid. You know, he takes this thing to his mom. His mom really is just like, oh, okay, yeah, ish. What did they say? The guy comes to the house, explains what they explain. Now, the mom signs the agreement, right? The son wants this thing. He wants to blow up. First year, the kid is moving. The kid is moving crazy. Then, next minute, money issues are now starting, right? He now wants to leave. Then, when they look at the agreement and what the mom signed, there were so many things layered in that contract. It was crazy. They put like an auto renewal that says like, if you don't cancel this agreement 8 months in advance, we will automatically renew it for 10 years. You understand? Kid was stuck. You understand? Kid was stuck. So it's very important that one, everything is in the agreement. And two, when you get the agreement, make sure it gets scrutinized as much as possible. But also the other thing about agreements, and that's what I've just learned recently, is that you need to make sure that it covers how you guys are going to fight. You have to think about when we fight. You have to think about, it's not always going to be nice. What is now the process when we fight? You know, make sure that's in the agreement, or you guys work that out, because then at least you're able to cover yourself. But then in terms of the masters, you're going to have to answer, are they paying for everything? They're paying for everything. You're just coming in. And I think you might have room to negotiate that, but they'll definitely push back and say, no, we're paying for everything. You're not bringing anything to the table.
Can I just add to what Nivo is saying about the contract and the masters? So again, going back to the initial conversation where I was just talking about what to look out for in a contract, termination clause, very, very important. Like, you need to, again, like Nivo said, how do we handle a situation where there is a conflict in this relationship, right? Am I able to get out? What does that look like? Is there a period for remedial? How long is that? And if that's not remedied, how do I get out? Two, the term, right? There's an initial term in every contract, say 3 years, if you're signing to an indie, right? But then they have this funny thing where everything is automatically renewed after the initial term. That should never be the case, right? If you want to renew an agreement, it has to say by mutual agreement by the parties in writing. Right. So you need to agree that you actually want to renew for a second, third or fourth option period. So that's very, very important to look out for. Again, going back to the question on the masters, what label has done for you plays a very important role, right, in ownership of the masters. And I want to, again, it's always like a debate, right, where I would say let the label own your masters and let them do with the music what they have to do, because that's why you joined a label to begin with, right? So if I am me and I sign to T-Effect Records, right, I have to give them, I have to assign to them my rights to my music, because then T-Effect is able to do what they need to, radio plugins, sync deals, all those things. They have to have the rights to the music in order to do that. Because then if they don't, it nullifies them as a middleman in doing what a label is supposed to do. So my argument, and you know, a lot of people would argue, no, why I need to own my masters. And I'm like, sharp, you want to own your masters, but what are you going to do with them? You're just you. You don't have the resources. You don't have the machinery. You don't have the structure of a label and the connections that they have to push your music. Let them own the masters for that 3-year period. Commit to whatever commitments that you have within that period. Let them play and do what they need to do with it. When you're done, if you're happy, renew by mutual agreement. If you're not, terminate. Then you get to retain your masters again, take your catalog elsewhere.
Or if you want to, if you can, you can give them your masters, but also work in a buyback clause where you're able to buy them back.
And then for instance, now you mentioned that this kid was stuck. So what happens in such a situation? Is there, I know legally he's bound, right? And there's nothing else that we can do. But from a legal point of view, is there no ethics that comes in? Like, okay, fine, we agree that he signed this, but ethically, this doesn't make sense. How do you fight for such a person?
Yeah, go ethical.
Yep.
And this is the thing, right? In law, you can never claim ignorance, or you can never claim, I didn't know better, unfortunately. And when something like this comes to us, you literally look at it and you're like, oh my God, like, how do I tell you that you actually, you're a bit of a pickle, right? It's difficult. It's difficult because, and we had a client recently who, and for, it was a very different scenario with a major. She got into an artist recording with a major, and she wasn't happy with the relationship and she wanted out. But now she wants to take her entire album that she recorded with them, with her, right? And they said, that doesn't work. And with a major, it's difficult because there's now international clearances that you need from whoever, guy, who needs to say, shop. Because at the end of the day, these are the label's assets, right? And they want to retain those. The unfortunate part is that they're probably never going to do anything with that. It just sits on their roster of things that they've done and music that they have. It's quite difficult, and sometimes the open and honest conversation you need to have legally is, unfortunately, you cannot, right? Or you get
in conversation that you don't want to say.
Exactly. It's uncomfortable even for us. It's unfortunate. Or you get into some kind of arrangement with the label, which isn't necessarily favorable, like an override, for instance. So you're going to leave the label and you want to go to another label, or you want to get into a distro with another label. However, they still need to recoup whatever it is that they'd given and put into that album. So they say, we want 5% of all your net receipts on the new projects for however many years until recoupment. God knows how long that's going to take. If they put in 100K, for instance, right? Sounds very little, but if your music's not making money, 5% over however many years is a very long time, right? So then that's the arrangement. That's the alternative. Override, or getting into like a tripartite agreement with another party to say, yeah, well, we want, she's out of Nevo Records and she's with Lesoho Records, but Lesoho Records, Nevo Records wants 5% of whatever would ordinarily be coming to us.
Sorry, there's one more that she's not telling you guys. Then there's a dirty side of the business where, for example, you then have to figure out, have these people been honoring this agreement? Then now, that's the other route. Now you're going down and dirty trying to figure out where did they breach or what. Yeah. It's a big, like I said, it's the dirty side of the business.
Yeah. Okay.
By the way, the artist still has not dropped any music in 2 years.
Shame. Yeah.
Thank you very much. My name is Sakelim Zalazala. Just want to ask a question, which I think it can be more of an advice. It's just that I keep being disturbed by these master rights. My question first, before I talk about masters, my question is on the legal side, the importance of asking for that contract, whatever contract you get, in your own language, you know, closer, because we all know our challenge as musicians. you know, I left school because of I business and money. Then I decided to be a musician, and then these contracts, they come with like domicilium, sitandi, you know. So we don't know those things. So I want to know the importance. And then secondly, on management as well, I need to know who is the employer, and then who is the employee between the artist and the manager. And then the last thing on masters, we only have two rights in the industry, in a recording, in a song, in a CD or music, you know, which is the recording right, and also the publishing right. The master right, which will always stay with whoever paid the studio. You know, we've been discussing that the ownership, it's always with whoever who paid for those recordings. And then on the publishing side, the publisher actually is the person who wrote the music until you assign those rights to a publishing company, you see. So on that one, I want to say every time when you ask for that permission of sampling the song or remixing, whatever you're going to do with the song, you have to ask for permission from the master, the person who owns the master, and the person who owns the publishing. By the way, I've got a book on music rights and business in the industry. And I love these sessions because that's where now we start to get more information. And I'm happy that the legal is here. And thanks to Loki and YouTube Black. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Another question. Then for that question.
The contract in your home language is a very tricky one.
I don't think it's impossible to get... I mean, I don't think the document itself could be translated into an African language, for instance. But you can get somebody, again, if I'm reading a contract, Kemosoto, I can then translate the contents of the agreement to somebody who is of the same language as I am, just so they can get an understanding. So in that way, I think it would, to an extent, assist in terms of understanding the contents of the agreement. Look, I would love for our contracts to be in languages that are understood by everyone, you know, African languages. But I don't think we've gotten to that point as yet. But in terms of translating, there are ways. I mean, I've read documents out, and this is not in my space professionally, but with contracts that I've done for family members, for instance, they do not know. I mean, they've got farms and they get into agreements with whoever, but Malume doesn't know what domicile means, for instance, you know. So I have to now narrow it down or at least translate exactly what this clause means and what the repercussions or ramifications of this means. So I think to that extent that it's possible.
And then I think just to answer the management conversation, it's a very tricky one. Let me tell you why. Sometimes you're the boss, sometimes you're not the boss as a manager. Because, for example, in our management agreement, you are taking your image rights and whatever other rights you're giving them to us to exploit. But then also in that agreement, you also sign over certain things to us to be able to do what we do. So, for instance, if... Funny enough, I actually had an argument with one of my clients this past weekend. He was smoking weed on a picture, right? And he posted it on Instagram. And then I said to him, yo, you're going to need to delete that. He says, why? I say, the problem is that you're going to fuck up the bag. We are in talks with a really big brand for a really big bag. And these guys are really crazy about it. So now I need to step in to the boss level and say, hey, Munna, take this thing out. Because if you don't want to take it, I'm going to log in myself and delete it. You know, so it really depends on what scenario, what situation. Sometimes they are our kids sometimes. You know, you play multiple roles. Sometimes you're the father. Sometimes you are the manager. Sometimes you're the number two. Sometimes you have to step up and be the number one. But it's a fluid relationship that you just figure out as you guys go.
I just want to ask a question quickly also. Now that we're talking on recording deals, a lot of people in the industry right now are rocking alone. They're doing these things by themselves. They just open up their own, I don't want to say recording labels, but entertainment companies. And their music is under that and all of that. How tricky is that? Is it, do we still need recording labels? Would you I think it's for management. Would you advise artists to be under management or just really do your own thing and just have your own, just have management and leave the recording things out?
It really depends on a lot of elements. It depends on a lot of elements. Do you have the money for it? You know, do you have the money to pay for someone to do your publicity? Do you have money for all these different things? The labels do. So if you want their money, they're going to want certain things from you. So you always got to take it scenario, situation by situation. But I need you guys to understand that making of the music isn't the end of the job. That's where the job starts once you've made the song. Because now you're going to have to work and try and build the brand. You're going to try and sell the music. And that takes a lot of effort and a lot of money that the labels have, you know? So certain situations, you really have to take it situation by situation. Sometimes artists just literally don't need the labels. I'll make an example. A lot of our clients, the way we've built and structured the ecosystems is there's a way in which we raise the funds for their own labels. So, for example, if you're taking a gig for 50 rand, 10% of that is going to go to a separate account so that all the stuff that we need that the label was going to pay for, you can pay for. You know, so you're always going to take it situation by situation.
Okay. So a hand, did you?
Hi, everyone. So my question is for T-Fake, and hopefully Lord can also answer this question because I just want a different perspective. So management, in terms of commission, what is the standard commission? Because I have a contract that I received, and she was saying that for booked events, she wants 35%, sponsorship, she wants 50%, brand deals, 45%, social media proper, she wants 20%.
Damn, that's crazy.
Is that Shook Knight's daughter?
Surely. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Mate, do you want to divulge your percentages?
A little bit of divulge my percentages.
Whoa, that's too much. That is hectic. No. That's too much. I can tell you right now that is too much. I think standard practice, you can, as legal, you can say yes or no. But I think like max is like 20% across the board, brand, bookings. But also just depends on contribution as well. Like, you're taking 20%. What are you giving me from that? Like, how is this a give and take? It's a partnership, remember? So you need to work for that 20%. But if it's just bookings, like you're looking at between 10 and 15%. If it's just bookings, but if I'm now doing brand and I'm doing bookings and I'm doing this and I'm doing that, like I'm doing more, so therefore I need to get more, right? But there's also situations where you have a company, like a management company, and you have a record label, and they both work together to get those things done. And sometimes the percentage can go to like a 30, but like that's pushing it, like we are pushing it when we're saying 30%. And like maybe 10% can go to like the bookings or like the management, and like another 20% can go to the label, whatever the case may be, because every situation is different. But you're 45%.
Such a half a brand.
No, that's too much. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. No.
What we do is we scale it based on who the artist is and what the artist is grossing. So if it's a up and coming artist and you're starting up, the percentage is gonna be higher because of the contribution that I'm gonna be putting in. The bigger you get as an artist, the more you start grossing, the lower our percentage starts going. But yeah, no, 45, 50, yes.
I also think because the deal that you've currently been presented with, and I'm assuming it's all encompassing, right? It's recording and management.
No, it's just management.
Look, I'd still go between, it has to 20, 25 at most. And if it's got brands, the recording as well, still 2025. Anything beyond that, that's crazy.
After the session, you must let me know what the name of that company
is. Then my last question, for an up-and-coming artist, how do you become your own publisher?
You don't want to do that, trust me.
Funny enough, right, I wouldn't discourage it because you look at a 25K, for instance. Sure. 25 is self-published. He's 25, doesn't have a publisher, and he's done pretty well. And look, he's approached us, and you know, we give all advice, and sometimes we say, look, let the streets push your music. The streets pushed Pele Makaveli, and Hustler's Prayer has gone gold. So, you know, I mean, look, it's good and well to have all these resources because they can do for you what you need them to. But also you need to look at your music. You need to look at your listening. You need to look at your market. 25K has a huge base. And that's why Pele Makaveli is where it is, for instance, today. And now he can think of, do I want a publisher? He has that leg room, you know, to kind of play around. Do I actually need a publisher?
Yeah. I think, Johan, for me, it's just the admin.
Yeah, that 100%, 100%.
It's the admin. But like you're saying, it depends. It really depends on the artist and what the situation is. So one of my clients, which you actually did the deal for, part of the stuff, okay, the deal is with a publisher, but like part of the music is co-pub, so it's a co-publishing, and then part of the other music is an admin deal where they just literally just do the admin of it. So it really depends on what the situation is.
Thank you.
Right. Yes, I think one. You can go.
45.
My God.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked. Yeah, I'm actually so shocked.
Hi, my name is Hanif Moulid. And I'm an artist manager, right? So, like what I was saying, right, when it comes to, like, the splits and stuff, right? So if, like, you're managing, for example, a group, and then so you have, like, your percentage with the group, for example, the 20% is the group. And then if you know, like, okay, all the artists in there are also individual artists, do I then have separate contracts with the individual artists, or does it not become, like, no mixing the two, or how does it go? Because if I build a group and then, you know, they all become something and then they all go out and do their individual careers, that, you know, leaves me in a tech situation. So do I have contracts with all the individual artists or how does it work? Then second question, the second question, like building the business. So we have the business. And then you also like want to do like, we also actually do like production and other stuff in the business. So do I have to like open the businesses is separate, like the talent management, then production, and then the label, like for example, Rock Nation, I'm not sure how the business is, but they have like talent management, sports agency, the label. So how does the business work?
I think the first, just for the first question, it depends again on the contract. Is your contract with the group and does it cover everybody, or is your contract with, well, is your contract with just the group, or is your contract with the group and the individuals? It really depends on what the agreement is.
I think just going back on whether you contract the group or individually, because things will change, right? So you may have a contract with the group today, but individually, they are these saying they're doing their own thing as well. Okay. So you would want to contract the group, right? But if each person or member of the group is also doing their own thing, whether it's in the music space or whatever space, you'd want to have a contract in place for that. Because if you get a booking for the group, you take a percentage of whatever you'd agree to. So your 20%, for instance, of the group's income, right? But if you're going to now, a member in the group is going to get an individual booking, then you need to have a contract as the manager for that individual and take a percentage of that individual's booking fee, for instance. So you want to have a contract. For instance, you look at a Black is Brown, right? So there's Mr. Jazik, frontline artist. Black is Brown has signed Zinzan, Biza, Maten, right? But if you're going to manage all of those people, there's a contract for Zan, Maten, Biza. They all have the individual contracts. But then if Zinzan and Maten want to release a collab like they did recently, then if they want to book them together, you need to look at them as a group. And if they want to book Zan alone, it's Zan alone. So just rather, it seems like a lot of it's an administrative muscle, but it's very important, especially to mitigate certain conversations that are unnecessary to be had. Like, I manage Zan Shop. I manage both Zinzan and Maten. This is, if you want the duo, this is the fee, this is my cut, essentially.
I think I'll take the last question.
Sorry, could I add one thing to that? It's just, Adam McFarlane, I work at YouTube, but prior to working at YouTube, I spent the last 10 years as a manager in the States. And one thing that I do know is that when you think about the individuals versus the group, those are two separate entities that are going to release music in separate ways. Yeah. But I think it really depends on how you think about structuring your business approach to that group versus the individual. And then to your point, it absolutely makes sense to have separate agreements because essentially that's a different release plan, different release strategy, different marketing promotions plan, it's a different legal responsibility. So it's almost like in order for you, there's groups in the States recently even that have like gone into things with every good intention and then fallen out. If you will, been ousted from the group, it's a legal nightmare. Yeah. So definitely on the front end, it's important to set up the entities as separate, especially if they're already communicating to you that they plan on going and doing separate things. The reality is that like not everybody's going to be equally successful with, and that's going to be a point of contention moving forward. So
there you have it.
Okay, so our last question, I think I had it. Yes.
Yeah, my question is more like the elephant in the room. It's something that I feel like it's not discussed a lot. I want to ask, like, it's about copyright infringement. So, let's say as an artist, your song gets stolen. What's the process? What do you do in that process? Let's say you have registered it, you have copyrighted it. So, what steps do you take? Because I know a few people who have had their songs stolen, but they couldn't do anything about it. So, as you guys are already in the industry, worked with these all the every day, what advice can you give to us as upcoming artists in terms of copyright infringement?
So, the first thing that people always want to do, because everybody knows, yeah, we're going to approach DSPs and we're going to have that song taken down. Like, it's a takedown. It's like the most popular thing that people want to do. We're issuing a takedown. So what I would advise in a situation like that, speak to, again, guys, I think I'm just a big fan of conversation because so much can be resolved in conversation. Approach whoever has allegedly stolen the song, right? Say, listen, this is a song that we've seen. This is the original song. Can we reach some kind of negotiation? Very similar to what you do with the sample clearance, right? Can we reach some kind of negotiation? We would want X percentage of your copyright, right? And look, more often than not, because nobody wants the song to be taken down, especially if it's doing numbers, right? The alternative, and should you not reach any kind of resolve, is to say, fine, until we've actually reached some kind of middle ground, we will approach DSPs, Apple, Spotify, to issue a takedown of the song. And then it can bring it back up when we actually have spoken about the terms that we'd like to move forward in. So yeah, that's how I would advise that you approach the song. Don't go for a takedown because at the end of the day, you still want it to continue making the money that it needs to, so that when you eventually have reached a point where you've agreed on a percentage, you get a cut of that.
Now, for instance, right? Let's say he actually wrote the song. He's alone on that song. So he was pretty much just going to get everything for himself. Now he needs to settle for a cut. How does that go about? Because now you are eating into his bag.
Are you talking about if he wrote the song?
Yeah, and he
records it. So because he hears it, then that person records it.
Yes, and then releases it. And then, okay, fine, it's doing numbers. Okay, good. And you're advising him to go speak to that person and say, you know what, I want a certain amount of cut from whatever you're making. But now he's only getting a cut. It's no longer the money that he was bound to make because then now he's settling because it's making rounds.
It depends. Sorry, before you answer. It depends on the situation. When that person stole the song, right, and they re-recorded the song, did they add anything new to it? Because if they added something new to it, then on the publishing side of things, there's
still not entirely yours.
Yeah, it's not entirely yours anymore. You know, but if they literally sang everything you said word for word and that's all, then that's your publishing.
That's when you can request 100% of the publishing.
Okay, I think we can close it off. But before we do, I just want from both sides, management and legal, last parting words. These are songwriters. These are producers. They're coming up in the industry. What should they look out for? What is your departing words for them?
Okay, number one from me, the music business, entertainment business is 100% relationship driven. That's one thing you must understand. It's 100% relationship driven because you're going to need something from someone. You're going to need something. You're always going to need something from someone to actually move forward. So make sure you're always servicing those relationships. No matter, I'll give you the smallest example, right? Where's this guy? JP. Where's JP? So there's a gentleman here he's got an amazing title now. He works at YouTube, right? In the UK. He used to work at Sony, right? Is that him? There he is. Hey, please clap for JP. That's my best friend. So he used to work at Sony, right? He and I built a relationship. We became friends. We serviced each other. If, for example, if he was going through a breakup, not like that. If he was going through a breakup, I'll bring him a bottle of alcohol and vice versa, right? Relationship. You've got to always service the relationship. Costa Titch's YouTube channel gets hacked. He's just moved to YouTube. Guess how quick we got it back? You understand? So you always got to make sure you're servicing relationships because you're going to need someone at the end of the day, right? I think that's the first and second thing. There's a lot of snakes in this business. And the snakes are always look pretty. You know, whatever they're presenting to you always looks amazing. Do not get lost in the sauce. Don't get caught up in the sauce of everything. Always scrutinize everything to the T. Those are my parting words.
I think mine is very simple. Seek legal counsel. It's really that simple. But more than anything, when presented with paperwork, take your time. Like, you actually can request that I go over a contract and seek the right advice from certain people. Don't feel obligated or rushed into getting into anything. And my biggest red flag is when somebody says, here's paperwork, I need you to sign quickly so we can start working. Why? You know, and we've seen it happen so many times. So I think that that's just, for me, very simple. Seek legal counsel and there's no rush. It's very exciting and you know you want to start working and you want to do everything and anything, but there's literally no rush because rather do it right and make sure that everything is in place than sign something only to have to deal with a bigger mess later on, you know, down the line. So take your time.
I think just to add to that, guys, please definitely take your time. We understand the situation is, hey, ba, if Ambitious comes here, they are offering you 500 tawa right now. You know, you at home, it's very tricky. You know, like, the situation at home is tough. It's literally your only way out. Take your time. Sorry, if you, Ambitious watches this, I love you guys.
All right, thank you so much to Nivo and Nisiho. I think this was quite informative.
That's what we do.